Hello. In this audio snippet, we were originally planning to continue talking about the post-Civil War period in America. As you may know, if you listened to the previous recording, we tried to talk a little bit about the 1876 presidential election. And we wanted to continue from there, but for some reason, I felt the strong need that we needed to talk about what seems like a completely different topic, but I do believe that it in a sense it ties into the whole fabric of everything we've been saying throughout all of these recordings. But before we get into those details, we would like to say like a few preliminary things, and I hope we don't take too long with those preliminary things. Just a clarification with the 1876 election, and two things that I may not have pointed out very clearly. One is the fact that in that election, the victory was by one electoral vote. There were, as you may recall, I believe it was three states that were in question because of what had happened with the suppression of votes and so forth. South Carolina, I think it was Florida and Louisiana, if I remember correctly. And the thing is that those oh, in Oregon, sorry. Basically, was South Carolina was won by the Republican. By a very small minority, but then there were the other three states that were won by supposedly in the initial count by the Democrat Samuel Tilden, but it turns out that in those cases there were issues because in Florida and Louisiana and even in South Carolina where the Republican won, there was massive voter suppression. It was voter suppression throughout the South, but in those three states in the South, it became the worst, you could say, and it made a difference in the final tally. So that's why the controversy was there. And with the Oregon voter, the electorate, one thing I didn't mention is that I really don't know what happened there with that elector who resigned because he worked for the Postal Service. And that technically violated the constitutional one of the constitutional requirements for an elector, that an elector cannot be a work for the government. But I know that the spirit of that clause did not include the Postal Service. It included people who are in an actual position of political power, exercising power. It's not the Postal Service. You know, the Postal Service always, you know, the arrogant Postal Service workers always going, oh, we are federal workers, you know, and they feel all empowered, and that's why they bully people all the time. But they really are not part of the federal government bureaucracy or system. I mean, they cooperate. You know, the Postal Service is like a whore, so they open themselves, and you know, they're available to any politician who's willing to use them if they're going to get a benefit from it. But aside from that, they're really not part of the government. So the thing is that this elector, who was a postal worker, resigned. And I wish I knew more about that story, what it was all about. And I'm not sure if it's really worth digging into it, but I keep wondering, did he was he one of those plants, you could say, you know, by the Democrats or what, you know, or maybe an Oregonian who was officially a Republican but was sympathetic to the South or Democrats, and maybe he you know, chose to be an elector and then saw the perfect opportunity. Now I'm going to resign, and my excuse is I'm a postal worker. Or maybe he was sincere. And but why did he resign? Why did who forced him to resign? Why wasn't he caught before, you know, he was assigned to caught as having as being a postal worker before being sent to Washington or whatever. So it seems very, very odd. And the thing is, eventually that electoral vote went to the Republican, that one from the Oregonian postal worker. And the victory, the final victory, was by one vote. So they reversed the results for two states, and the elector in Oregon stayed with the Republican, and they ended up winning. So even if they had overturned the two southern states' votes, that one Oregonian elector, if it had been allowed to have been replaced by the Democrat governor of Oregon at the time, then Tilden would have won anyway, because that's how close it was by one vote, electoral vote. So I just want to point out how crucial that was, and how, Rutherford B. Hayes decided to prostitute himself and sell black people down the river. And that's the thing that I wanted to mention also. I think it was partially mentioned, the sad irony that in 1776 it was supposed to be the Declaration of Independence, freedom for all Americans, including black people. And because we did not go through the process we were supposed to go through, starting with the birth of the colony of Georgia, then it was only a partial freedom, partial independence. And then exactly 100 years later, after we fought the Civil War and more than half a billion, or half a million, I'm sorry, half a million people, Americans died, 600,000 died. After all of that and all the heartache and everything that happened after that, we had the opportunity to, okay, set the record straight. Okay, let's fix the mistake done from 100 years ago, and let's give independence to all people now, this time. 100 years from, on 1876, let's wipe the slate clean and have a brand new start. And instead of that, it's as if America said, "Oh, okay, no, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. 100, I know it's 100 years later, but black people, you're still not free. You're still not free." And that's when, and that's one thing America always does. It's always given these extra opportunities to set the record straight, to correct things from before. And sometimes it does like a partial correction, but it's never really the real full correction. And that's why America is dying, 2 to 3 months from now, because we've been given chance after chance after chance. And 1876 is a clear example of that. We as a people did not do it. And it was all a collective thing, because in 1874, the American people put the Democrats in power in the House by an overwhelming majority. It was one of the biggest turnovers of in the House in American history, from one party being in control to the opposite happening in one election, and the Democrats completely controlled the House. And that was the problem with that election, that if they went to I forget the term, we just spoke about it a week ago and I forgot about already, but I think it's the contingency election or whatever. If the electoral college was disputed, then it would have gone to a House vote. And because the House was controlled by the Democrats, Tilden would have won. And that's why Rutherford B. Hayes felt the need to, I'm sorry to say it that way, but to open himself, and let him, or basically, bend over, and let the South, have his way with him. And that's how black people ended up being literally or figuratively sold down the river and said, "No, 100 years from 1776, you still have no independence." And that was a very dark day. But so those were some of the things we wanted to emphasize or clarify about 1876. And ironically, just as a side comment, I was not going to say this, but on the 4th of July, I had to go to New York, and we posted a recording, the recording on the 1876 election on the 4th of July. So I went to New York and I posted it there. But whilst I went there, I had an encounter with a postal worker, who happened to be black, and the worthless, pathetic little bastard, treated me like rubbish. I have to tell you all the details of what happened. It was totally unprovoked, very nasty. And I said to myself, "Wow, I am about to post a recording where I talk about the injustices being done to you fellow black, fellow American who happens to be black, talking about the injustices done to you. But you, as a postal worker, it's as if." The postal service kind of felt that I was going to also mention them in a negative way in the recording, and it's like it threw him, it reacted. And I said, wow, it's interesting how black people have now become the agents of the very people who have worked to suppress them. And at that moment, I said to myself, I'm sorry to say it like that, but I said within my heart, the hell with black people. Sometimes I'm watching documentaries on how they were, how we treated them in the past. And I literally, and I'm not just saying this, I literally, you know, break down and start crying in sorrow over what we did to black Americans. But it's coming to the point where it's like, I don't care anymore. I mean, I don't care. I mean, you don't care that I care. You don't care about the people who care about you. You don't care about yourselves, about changing. You're people not worth crying for as a people. And it's sad to say it like that, but that's kind of how it is. And I know there are a few exceptions, but in general, it is... it is sad to fight and shed tears and sacrifice for a people that don't deserve the sacrifice, who will not use it appropriately. And as I've said before, and I do mean this, if I had been told at some point, you will have to sacrifice your life and you'll have to die very young, and your life will be a sacrifice that will enable freedom for black people in America, even though I'm not black, I would have said, okay. I would have been sad about it, you know, obviously for natural reasons, but I would have gotten over my sadness and said, okay, let's do it, you know, like the Flight 93 passengers. Okay, let's roll, let's do it. But black people have proved not to be worthy of any type of sacrifice. Look at what happened after. You know, with all his flaws and all the things that I have said about him that are wrong, about Martin Luther King, look at what happened after all the sacrifices and all the people who made all these peaceful protests during the 1960s, who got hosed down literally by the Alabama police and all these things, all these great sacrifices. And so what? So that now black people can go around smoking cannabis all over the place, where black people can go into stores and do these mass lootings or shopliftings that they do, that a whole group of black kids going into a store and just looting and taking everything they want. That's what all that sacrifice was for. You know, all the people who went to jail, all the people who went through, Jackie Rob, I don't remember his name. It's so weird. Jackie Robinson, I think it is. I should know this. The first black baseball player in the major leagues in the modern era. All the things he went through and all these sacrifices made by all these people. For what? You know, for what? What for? It was for nothing. And that's what I felt at that moment when this pathetic little bastard started attacking me. A black son of a bitch. Self-righteous and arrogant. Everything I had just said in the recording that I was about to post a few minutes after that incident. It happened in New York. Everything just got manifested at that time. And it's so sad. So, and these black people were the ones who were supposed to be the watchtower shouting a lot of the things that are being said in these recordings, or shouting along, you know, but they're too busy prostituting themselves to whoever will give them a few crumbs, and even if that means staying a slave to them, because that's what they are. Black people are still a slave to the Democrat Party. And they are the enemies of the truth. And that's why Black America is dead. Black America died around 2015, 2016. I don't remember the exact year, but it was in August of one of those 2 years. I'm not sure why. I can't remember the exact year. But it was around August of 2015 or 16 that Black America was done. And now all of America will be done in a few months. So that was one quick thing I was supposed to say in 4 minutes or 3 minutes, but it took a little longer than that. The other thing I wanted to mention, and I hope this one will be quick, is just emphasizing how dark the environment is in America right now. The darkness is not just very visible, now it's palpable. And it's almost like you can touch it and it's solid. I mean, that's how evil it is. Like, for example, ever since around June 29th, I believe it was, you know, that was the date we posted a recording on June 29th, and how it was the 20th anniversary of the day Latin America died. Starting around that time, and I know these are not coincidences, I have started being, there's some Hispanics in the area where I live who are starting this constant harassment. And I could go into the details, but I don't think it's worth going into them in this recording because it would be too long. And it involves, you know, mentioning a lot of a few personal things, not too private or personal, but it's not worth going into the details. The thing is, suffice it to say that now these Hispanics are harassing all day. And the weird thing is when they're not, one day I curse them out loud and they stopped for a short while, but it was like they got stunned that someone confronted them, and then they stopped, and then I said, oh, I'm going to get some rest finally. And then as I was thinking that, I had the window open and the smell of cannabis started coming in, which had not come in quite a while. So I said, oh my goodness, when it's not the Hispanics, it's the cannabis bastards. So there is no rest. You know, there's the, you know, in the Bible, it says there's no rest for the wicked. Well, in America, there's no rest for the righteous. And so there is no rest for anyone who wants to live by the truth. There is no rest. It's this constant harassment. It's going to get worse and worse. This is third world environment. I can tell you, I categorically can tell you with 100% conviction, this is what it feels like to live in a third world country. This is exactly the constant environment. That's why those countries are dead and never never have progress, never have development, because they are in this environment of constant harassment of the truth. You can't live by the truth and live in those environments in peace, and that's what's happened in America. And it's always been like that, you know, to a certain extent, especially in the last few years, but now it's just gone over the edge. Now it is a third world country. We are in a third world environment, and that's why America will officially become a third world country a few months from now. It's very sad. It gets to the point I say, I don't want to live here. I hate this country. That's what I start saying in my heart. I hate America. I hate this country. I hate it because of all the people and the darkness, the evil. They don't give me a chance to just sit down and rest for a second and just be myself and just live in a normal environment. Normal. No, it's this constant harassment, and it said the Hispanics in, you know, who started the constant harassment, and they are cursed. I know what's going to happen to them, and it will be very sad. And their timelines, something's going to happen to them. Certain few months from now, something else going to happen else a few other more months after that, and then another big thing's going to happen some months after that. So the thing is, and they're going to continue the harass. They're evil. They're like hyenas. They start laughing and doing all these things, you know, totally unprovoked. And I know that the thing that happened was that when I said the thing about January 29th and emphasized that, it's as if it stirred something in them. You know, they are not listening to these recordings. Obviously, they don't even know these recordings exist. But it's, you know, there's something in them that reacts to that. You know, and then it becomes very palpable. So the country is, there is no hope. It's gone. It is gone. I mean, there is no sign of anything, and I'm not even looking for it anyway. But even if I was, there is nothing to find. It's just going downhill. So now the third thing I wanted to mention before finally getting to the topic was just adding one little detail to something we said before. We talked about, and I forget in which recording it was, but it was in one of the last two recordings that we talked about Trump visiting South Carolina. I think it was Pickens County, a town called Pickens in Pickens County or something like that. And at 1 hour after he left, a big storm just ravaged the town. And the storm hit two counties, Pickens County and Greenville County, which were the two counties that Trump touched, landed on. You know, he apparently landed on Greenville County, and then from there took a plane into Pickens County to speak there. And then he left and went back, I guess, to Greenville County, and then back to Florida or wherever he was headed next. So the thing is that the two counties where he touched down, that's where this freak storm touched down in South Carolina, specifically in those two counties. And it was to emphasize, you know, Trump is not the solution. You know, you're going to put your hope in him, you're going to have disaster afterwards. And it happened in South Carolina because South Carolina is the hotbed of conservatism and American isolationism. This idea that, you know, we just have to go into this bunker and isolate ourselves in conservatism and we'll be just fine from the rest of the world. The rest of the world can go to hell as long as we're fine. Everything is going to be okay. As long as we stay in our religious conservatism, we're going to be fine. That's what South Carolina represents. That's why the storm hit there. Because, you know, Trump has been visiting a lot of places, but why the storm hit in South Carolina specifically was because of what South Carolina represents. And the other thing I wanted what I did want to mention is that, you know, he had Lindsey Graham, who is one of the senators, I think, for South Carolina in the Senate. He had him speak in the rally, and Lindsey Graham is a snake, is a traitor. He's a rhino, a Republican who acts conservative when it suits him and then, you know, betrays conservatives whenever he can. And why, for the life of me, why would Trump have Lindsey Graham speaking at his rally? You know, that just shows. And the thing is, the story came out that when Lindsey Graham came on stage, the crowd booed him, deservedly so. So clearly, you know, he's not liked there by, you know, conservatives. And why would Trump have this guy who betrayed him constantly? I think he never stood up for Trump during the election, you know, controversy and all that. And he's always, you know, siding with the Democrats whenever it's convenient for him. He's just a sniveling coward and a snake and a traitor. So why would he have him there? Well, that just shows you Trump never learned a thing. He didn't learn a thing. He keeps putting people around him that keep betraying him, who because he likes to have, you know, people compliment him. So somebody comes with a compliment and it just melts him. And especially if you have this look that he likes, there's certain things that he likes about people. If you look clean and polished and you have power and influence or whatever, you seem to have certain authority around you, whatever, something, a certain type of visual that he likes. So if you have that and or you know the compliment thing, you get into his heart and you can control him. And the thing is, I went through the comments in the comment section of you know when they talked about Lindsey Graham being booed, and one of the first comments was, "Oh, he set him up all right." In other words, the guy was saying, implying that Trump deliberately knew, asked Lindsey Graham to speak for him at the rally because he knew that he was going to put him in front of a hostile crowd and he would feel, you know, the hatred and the boo. So he set him up on purpose to be humiliated publicly. And I said to myself, "Oh my goodness, you know, these people and the 3D chess stuff, you know, that all this 3D, 4D, 5D chess that Trump is always playing." And but then some people responded to that and said, "No, that if he was setting him up, why did he defend him?" And that was the comment, more or less, a very succinct in response to that. And I did, when I continued reading down the thread, I didn't see anyone challenge what that guy said. But what I mean by that is, I didn't watch the video. I don't want to watch the video. I don't care to hear, listen to Trump or Lindsey Graham or any of these bastards. I couldn't care less. I don't want to even watch the video or listen to anything. So I don't know exactly what happened, but I can, you know, because I didn't watch the video, but I can discern from the comments that he really did defend him. Because if Trump had not defended him after the booing, then someone in the comment section would have, you know, one of Trump's groupies would have jumped out and said, "Oh, how dare you lie about our great leader? He did not defend him. What are you talking about?" But no one did, so that tells me that he did defend him. In other words, that after the booing, Trump came on and said, you know, why did, you know, or maybe at that very moment he said, "Oh, don't do that, you know, that's not appropriate," or whatever. So he, it's not 3D chess, 4D chess, 5D chess. He's not even playing checkers. I mean, that's not, he's not even playing checkers, much less 3D chess. And then some other people started saying, "Well, I love him and everything, but he seems to have this personality trait, this flaw, personality flaw that he puts around him all these people that all these traitors, and he just doesn't seem to learn it." And the person gave some examples, you know, like what happened with Tony Fauci and Bill Barr, you know, the attorney general, and all these people, all these traitors that he put in that ended up stabbing him in the back and using him and all that. And then people started defending him, saying, "Well, no, well, he, what happened is, he didn't know Bill Barr told him he was going to do this and that, and he believed him, and then he got betrayed, but, you know, that was an honest mistake." And same thing with Tony Fauci, he was giving him false science and blah, blah, blah. And I go, "My goodness, these people don't understand. I knew Tony Fauci was a falsie, and I'm not living in Washington. I don't have, you know, it's not like I was given you know, a private briefing, you know, from very important people telling me, you know, that these things are not true," or whatever. It was clear as day, you know, this is all nonsense. I knew it. Why couldn't he know it? And to this day, he still doesn't know it. That's the sad thing. He still doesn't know it because he's still supporting Operation Warp Speed. He's still proud of promoting the injections. He's still proud that he shut down the economy, and all these things. So he still doesn't get it. And the Bill Barr thing. When is that, has he ever said, "I made a mistake, and I should have known better"? No, he's never said that. So he has never learned. He will never learn. Just putting Lindsey Graham there. I mean, that might have been half the reason why the storm showed up shortly after that. It's just an example. He is lost, and all these people who are coming and flocking to him, who filled the town of Pickens, coming from all over the place to support Trump, are, you know, they're looking for a hero. But as Tina Turner said, we don't need another hero. All we want is life beyond the Thunderdome. That's what we want. And Lindsey Graham and all these people are part of the Thunderdome. And people are still flocking to Trump thinking he's the hero. Why? Because they don't, because he is the great white hope, the last hope of conservatism. Conservatism says, no, we're the truth, we're the truth, we are in the right, we're in the right. And they've been proved false, wrong over and over and over again, and are being defeated and destroyed, and they're still not standing, not willing to look into themselves and say what's wrong with us. So to avoid having to do that introspection and questioning the founding fathers and questioning the Constitution, questioning all that they believe in all their lives, they put their hope in Trump and say, hey, he is our hope, and we're gonna make it. We just need someone with a little bit of oomph to get us, through the end, across the finish line, and that's why we're dying. And so that's one thing I wanted to mention. The other thing that I wanted to mention before getting to the actual topic is, and this one, although it looks like another digression, is part of kind of an introduction, you could say, to what we are about to talk about. And I do believe the other things we have talked about kind of are related. So they seem like digressions, but they are somehow related. I do believe that. So this other thing I wanted to share with you is an email I got. I'm getting emails from some conservative thing. I don't know how I got in their email, on their email list. And I could have unsubscribed, but I'm getting them, and I'm kind of using them to kind of take a peek at what they're thinking, you know, to kind of listen to them. And I've been getting these, it's from conservativedirect.com. I don't know how I got on their, you know, subscription list or how they got my email. But the thing is that they've been sending me some emails, and some of them are for, you know, in support of DeSantis. And I wanted to read part of one of the emails that I got from them. It's an email that came in on the 27th of June, and it's from the DeSantis campaign. And it says, "Friend, I'm pledging to put our country on the path to American renewal. Over the next 18 months, Americans will face a choice to reverse the decline of our country or surrender our American ideals to woke ideology." And I hate these. DeSantis sounds very political. He talks like a politician. And I think he's sincere in what he believes, but it's annoying that he doesn't get that that stench of political speak off of him. It's like he has that, he sounds like a politician. That means he does not, when someone talks like that, it just shows you he does not, he or she or whoever, does not understand what's in front of us. They think that they can work within the system. They can use traditional techniques. That tells me, I believe in using traditional methods and techniques to solve our problems. It's not a person who is challenging the structures, who is challenging the current status quo and saying, okay, we need to do something different. We need to find the real truth, because these procedures, these techniques are not the truth. But he doesn't think that way. He thinks he's still trapped in the 1970s or 1980s in his thinking, like we were the America of the 1980s. And we're just going to run a traditional campaign and do this thing. And he does say, oh, we do things differently. We're not doing things traditionally. But at the end of the day, it's the path is a traditional path. He doesn't understand that what this country needed is a revolution, a revolutionary. This is not how a revolutionary talks, like a visionary. It says here, "I refuse to stand down and watch the work of our founding fathers fade into a form that is unrecognizable. I know that freedom is worth fighting for, and that a leader always finds a way." So again, he's saying, watch the work. So he's saying, we want to go back to our traditions, our past, our founding fathers. So he doesn't get it. He just doesn't get it either. and our founding fathers, and I have mentioned that before, I believe, it is, it just, it makes my skin crawl when I hear say people say our founding fathers, our, it's like, oh, you know, this sense of, oh, you know, my, our leaders, our great messiahs. There's a certain cult of personality there. It's a like a groupie kind of thing, admiring their rock star founding fathers. It's very, very very self patronizing, or self, I prefer the term self matronizing. You know, it's like, oh, we're putting ourselves, you know, like we are the little children of our great founding fathers. You know, we are just children of their greatness. So, and in their thinking, the children are always inferior to the fathers. And because of that, they can never improve on what the fathers established. And that's a very dangerous thinking. It's very hierarchical. It's very ancestral, very top down, and very elitist. And they don't understand all the demons that come out every time they say our founding fathers. It's the demons of elitism, the demons of ancestral hierarchy, and all these things. I don't know how else to say this, but they just don't get the thing. What I wanted to get to after, it's so dichotomous, it's so kind of like schizophrenic, because the very next paragraph says the following: we're going to make sure truth is the foundation of everything we do in this country, friend, and we're going to make sure common sense is no longer an uncommon virtue. We're going to be strong, we're going to be energetic, and we're going to get things done, blah blah blah, you know, hip hip hooray. But what I wanted to mention is that paragraph, or that sentence, we're going to make sure truth is the foundation of everything we do in this country. And it's so sad, because in the previous paragraph, he's going back to the founding fathers and the faulty foundation that it under, you know, under which the country is crumbling and will die in two or three months. And then at the very next paragraph, he does say what would have rescued us. And I don't know if you've noticed, and I think we've said this before, but if you've been listening to these audio recordings, the whole point of the new American Constitution that we began to describe is a constitution that allows that enables a country where the king is the truth. That's who our leader should be, the truth. The truth is, that's the intention, to make the truth our king, and that's, everything is geared towards the truth, the truth, the truth, and out of that flows everything else. You know, as a conservative Christian would say, you know, quoting the Bible, you shall know the truth, and the truth shall set you free. So the focus is not on having a country with freedom. The focus is on having a country where where truth is the king. And when truth is the king, then freedom will abound. And we'll try to explain a little, if we get to it, because I've been talking about so many things. But if we finally get to it, to the point of this recording, I hope you will see what a little more of what that means. You know, when it says the truth will set you free, what that really means. Because I don't think, you know, most conservative Christians are always quote, you know, those verses of scripture of the Bible, and they don't have a clue what it means. It makes them feel good. It, you know, they go hip hip hooray. But I don't think they really know what that means. I really don't. Otherwise, this country would not be dying. But it's sad. But it's interesting to me that regardless of the flaws in this man, he did say the right thing, and that is the reality. The truth is to be our king. A country not where certain elites are the king. It's where the truth is the king, and the truth enables individuals to manifest themselves in their fullness, and that's part of you know, what it means to be free. And we're not the slaves of an elite class that tells us what to do, what not to do. Because truth is, it has that ability. You know, once you are a human being imbued with the truth, then you achieve everything that you're supposed to achieve on earth. You're empowered, and then all castes are broken, all these temporal barriers are broken, and you transcend all of that, and that's part of being free. Okay, so now let's get to the point. Now, before getting to the actual point, I wanted to recap some things we've said before. And I know it sounds like I'm just repeating myself and not getting to the point, but this is part of what will, this is important to mention at the beginning before getting to the actual point. As you may recall, if you've been listening to these recordings, a long time ago, we talked about the 10 pillars the new American Constitution would have been established or founded. And the first five pillars are designed to reflect the nature of true authority. And the second set of five pillars define the rights of the individual. And the first five pillars, more or less, and I'm kind of paraphrasing because I might have said these things in a different way, but I hope that I'll be kind of saying the same thing, just with different words. The first pillar, if I remember correctly, that we talked about is true authority exists and is independent of us. That's how you know. In other words, a society has to, one of the first pillars under which a society is to be built is to for that society to have an awareness that there is a true authority out there. It exists. It's just, and it's independent of us. I cannot fashion the true authority to fit my agenda. I cannot decide what that true authority is. I cannot say, for example, I decide that stealing is okay. So I'm going to go shoplift and do some muggings and all this stuff. And I'm going to decide what the truth is. And I'm going to make myself respected by buying a gun, and then I'm going to become the authority, and I'm going to, you know, tell people to give me their wallets. You know, I'm using my gun as my authority. I'm telling them, give me your wallet, because that's what I want to happen. No, you can't make truth or authority fit what you want it to be. It's not subjective. It's objective. It's outside of you. It exists and it's independent of us. We just have to find it. That's the challenge. You know, because people say, well, what is the truth? You know, to quote a famous historical figure from 2,000 years ago, you know, what is the truth? It's always been the question. It's not an easy answer, but there is an answer. And the challenge of the human being is to go find it, to answer that question. What is the truth? So that's the first pillar. True authority exists and it's independent of us. The second pillar is true authority cannot be limited to temporal things. And I might have said this differently before, but it's more or less the same concept. True authority cannot be limited to temporal things. In other words, true authority does exist, but you cannot kind of put it ascribe that nature of true authority to a temporal institution. You can't say the Chinese Communist Party or whatever party has the truth. They are the truth, and true authority emanates from them. They are the source of all truth, and all true authority, if it doesn't come from the Chinese Communist Party or from the Democrat Party or from whatever party, then it's not, it's not true authority, and I'm not going to submit myself to it. That is wrong thinking, or an institution or a person. You know? And the problem is that we have done that, with the Constitution and the Founding Fathers. They were temporal people, temporal document, with temporal people who were very flawed. They were very decent people. Oh, yeah, yes. I can hear all the conservatives always, defending them. They were not perfect, but they were great human beings, and they sacrificed and blah, blah, blah. Yes, I know all that. But even so, they left a lot of rubbish for us to clean up. Yes, they founded the country. I understand that. They helped to establish the country. They fought and they sacrificed life and limb. I understand that. But they were unwilling to go all the way in some things. And we just had to finish what they had started. But we said, no, true authority comes from them. If it's not coming from the American Constitution as it's written now, it is not true authority. And that's how a conservative thinks. If these concepts are not coming from the thinking of our founding fathers, as they say, you know, in cult-like fashion, then it cannot be true. That's why a conservative listening to these audio recordings would just, you know, just go vomit and turn the thing off and never listen to these recordings ever again, because they're challenging his sacred cows, and that's what the second pillar is kind of against, sacred cows. There are no temporal things. Like, true authority always permanently comes from this institution or this person or this document, earthly document, and so forth. That's the second pillar. The third pillar is true authority does not use power for banal purposes or self-aggrandizing purposes. And, you know, for example, the people at the Postal Service, they believe they are federal workers, so they have authority, so you don't mess with me, because if you mess with me, it's a federal offense, and you can go to jail, and blah, blah, blah. So they use that, they have this sense of empowerment, and they use it constantly to abuse people. When you go to the post office, they treat you like dirt, and if you don't, you know, treat them with reverence and respect, they will trash you. I've had the Postal Service withhold mail from me, and one time they held a package because I confronted one of the postal workers because they had I didn't confront them. It's a long story, but I did something and the postal worker got offended, and I wasn't even trying to offend him. It was the saddest thing. It had nothing to do with him. But the thing is that he got offended, and eventually there was a package that came, and they said, you have to come to the post office to pick it up. I said, and I went to pick it up, and then you are not going to receive the package until we give you a talk down. So a guy came and started giving me a lecture, trying to tell me all the things that were wrong with me and this and that. And he didn't even give me a chance to hear my side of the story. In other words, he heard whatever, you know, the stupid postal worker complained about. He didn't even hear my side of the story. That didn't even say, okay, what is your side? Because the worker here said that you did this, that, the other. What is your side? No. The verdict had already been passed, and I confronted him on that, and I even filed a complaint, and it was a long process. It was a long, horrible thing. The thing is that they used their power of the package to get me to. They wanted to dress me down. They wanted to humiliate me. They wanted to get me to the post office so that I would, you know, cringe like a little puppy and say, "Oh no, I'll never say anything that will offend you, Your Highness." And if I told you the story of what happened, you would understand that I didn't do anything that was wrong. I was just asking them to do their job. That's all. And at the beginning, it wasn't even with them. It was with someone else. It was some mail that I was getting that I was not supposed to get. I was trying to get that mail returned to the people that were constantly sending it to me. And the postal worker just would ignore me. But as part of his job, he has to, as part of, you know, returning mail that's not for you, you have to, you know. Then I started, long story. There's so many details in that story. It's so sad, but the thing is, they use their power they wanted to say, hey, we can control your mail. And if you don't treat us with the reverence and awe that we deserve as postal workers, then we will withhold your packages, and you will not receive your mail. I mean that. And when I confronted them and I complained about that, it got into a big problem. They got into a big thing. The thing is, and the guy who spoke to me, I said to him, you will suffer something very bad 4.5 years from now. And the interesting thing is the 4.5 years more or less came to pass towards the end of June. Might have been June 29th, who knows? I don't remember the exact date. But I said to him, 4.5 years, you will know exactly what I'm talking about. And I have a feeling that he must have traveled to some third world country, and he must have experienced the things that I told him that were wrong with the third world, because I kept telling him, you are acting like a third world person. He was going off about, oh, I'm married to a lady from the third world and so forth. And I have a feeling he went down to the country where his wife was from. He was a white guy. He looked white. He might have been, you know, maybe a white Hispanic, who knows, but he looked very white, almost Anglo-Saxon. And he must have gone down there, and I think that he must have gotten a taste of what third world violence is about. And I think that's maybe that's why this guy acted up on July 4th, as if like the Postal Service was reacting in vindictiveness to the sentence that I had decreed on him 4.5 years ago. I don't know. The thing is that that is the third pillar. You don't use true authority as a way to, you don't use it for banal purposes. If you have authority, if you have power, you use it to uphold the truth. You don't use it to show people you're the boss. You don't do it to become rich off of other people and be lord and master over them just for the hell of it. The fourth pillar is those exercising true authority will be in constant growth and constant self-examination. In other words, people who are operating in true authority will take time off from their procedures and what they're doing and examine them and say, okay, are we doing things right? Like a self-evaluation or meditating, do we need to go further? Maybe we're doing things right, but there's something missing or something new we need to learn. It's like taking time off from all of your activities to think about these other things. And that's, for example, like, you know, the injections and the masking and all that. You know, only a few people were looking at the data and saying, okay, look at the countries who are locking down, who are masking up. Look, is the virus being contained there versus the countries that are not masking up or not doing lockdowns? And it was clear that the lockdowns and the masks made no difference. And in many cases, it seems like the lockdown and mask countries were worse off. The virus was running more rampant in those places than in the countries that just let things be and let natural immunity take hold, because the virus was not as lethal as it was portrayed. But no one wanted to sit down and look back and examine. Not Trump, not anybody, no one. Or just a few people, you know, who started raising the alert and all that. But that's what you do. Like, for example, we have this deficit that's growing, the national debt that's growing, or the war on poverty that son of a bitch Lyndon B. Johnson started in 1964, I think it was, the war on poverty, with all these social programs and money, billions and billions and trillions of dollars spent on these poverty programs. And no one looks back and says, okay, what the hell happened with all these billions? Did it work? Clearly, the answer is no, because it now created this this culture of people who are incapable of leaving the culture of poverty. It didn't empower anybody. It never led to any change, any real change in the poverty numbers. So it's all these billions spent. No one took time off to examine them. But true, those who exercise true authority will be in constant growth. They know we have to go from dimension to dimension. And we can't just be stuck in one thing, because truth is expansive. It's infinite. It's constant, eternal growth. I mean, that's what the truth is. You have this. You think that the whole truth of a good government is in that pathetic little constitution that you so worship, conservative? Do you think that's the whole thing? You think that that's it? And you could say, yeah, you could have the basic principles and all of them be true, but it's not even that. It's just a hodgepodge of little clauses. It's a chop suey of things. It's not even organized in a structural way. There's no clear understanding of what are the fundamental human rights. There's no rights there. It's like, oh yeah, right to bear arms. Yeah, that's the Second Amendment. Okay, wonderful. Is that one of the five fundamental human rights? Is that, and then where's the right to privacy? Where's the right to life? Where's the right to property? It's such a badly crafted document. And but we started with that. It had some truth in it. Clearly, it had some truth in it. America was not founded on just utter falsehood. Otherwise, we would have never, you know, succeeded to the level that we did succeed as a nation in human history. But it was clearly, it needed a lot of transformation and growth. And we never took that time to do that. We wrote it once, and it's done. You know, it's like writing a software prototype and say, hey, that's it. There's no going to be no version 2, no version 3, no version 5.0, no nothing. That's it. It's fixed, permanent, and forever. And that's a violation of that fourth pillar. And the fifth pillar is true authority is manifested in temporal things, which seems like a contradiction of pillar number 2. Pillar number 2 says true authority cannot be limited to temporal things, but pillar number 5 says true authority is manifested in temporal things. In other words, you can't get all abstract and ethereal and say, oh, you know, authority is very, you know, it's way out there, it's, you know, it's in the twilight zone out there somewhere, and we have to just feel it with our vibes, and it's all ethereal and abstract. No, yeah, it is, you know, it's out there, it's invisible, you can't touch it, you know, you can't say, hey, truth, it's right there. But the truth will take temporal form. In other words, just to give you an idea, true authority exists and it's out there. It doesn't mean, like, then if a police officer stops you because you were speeding, you're not going to say, oh, you're not true authority. I'm not going to submit to you because you're a temporal being. And therefore, I will not listen to you or submit to you. No. Well, true authority is being manifested in that cop who stopped you and who's giving you a ticket for, you know, a reckless driving or whatever, because what you're doing is endangering the right to life of others. And it's being manifested in that one person. So when you see him and you see him exercising that authority, you go, oh, there is true authority in human form. If you see what I'm trying to say. So it's not just denying all, you know, all material reality. It's that true authority will, you have to be open to the idea that true authority will be manifested in temporal things, in temporal institutions, in temporal people, etc., etc., etc. But it's not limited to it. Or you cannot say, oh, this, he is the source of all truth. Whatever the cop says, that is the truth. No. But truth will operate through him and exercise authority. So those are the five pillars. And the next five pillars are the five fundamental human rights. That's, you know, for the total of 10 pillars. And the other five pillars are the right to life, the right to privacy, the right to property, the right to a fair reputation, and the right to a personal domain. Okay, so now that we've gone through the intro, which took us forever, don't have too much time left. Now let's start talking about the actual thing we wanted to talk about. And the topic is contracts. and what we want to talk about is false contracts versus true contracts, or what I would call old style contracts or versus new style contracts. If you operate by false contracts, you operate in oldness, and you operate by true contracts, then you operate in newness. False contracts lead to staleness, stagnation, death, degradation. True contracts lead to newness, leads to innovation, leads to life at all levels. So to kind of get a sense of what we're trying to talk about, let's talk a little bit about liberalism, and talk about the contradictions in liberalism, and that will begin to kind of surface what we want to talk about regarding contracts. So, for example, we've mentioned before in previous recordings that liberalism is very contradictory because it always claims to promote compassion and empathy, but when it promotes it, it just promotes it at one level, but then you see them how they behave, and you see, wow, that's totally the opposite of compassion or empathy. Well, because they say, oh, I'm the type of person who feels everybody else's pain, and when somebody's weak and vulnerable and being oppressed, the poor mass is being oppressed by the white rich elite class, ruling class, the one percenters oppressing the poor little 99%ers and all this, and they make themselves sound like they are so loving and compassionate, but then you tell them, what about this fetus? Oh, terminate it. Whatever. I don't care. It's a problem. I don't want to get pregnant. I have a life and I have things to do, and therefore, this thing's got to go. So they go to the abortion clinic and boom, they cut it off. But but you show them an advert on television of dogs being mistreated. And they go, oh, the dogs, the poor little doggies, and the poor little animals being mistreated. And I'll be very honest. When I watch those commercials on television, I have to look away sometimes because it really hurts me to see animals being mistreated like that. Really, really, really bothers me. So there's nothing wrong with having empathy about that. But on the one hand, you can show. If you can claim to have all this compassion for a little dog or a little cat or a little animal being abused and mistreated, but then you have absolutely no compassion for that little fetus that's being just terminated, it's helpless. You claim to be the defender of the weak and the helpless, those who cannot speak for themselves. If there's anything that cannot speak for itself, it's a little fetus. But it's alive. You know it's alive. It's alive and kicking, literally, many mothers can test. Pregnant mothers can testify. It's alive and kicking. It reacts to the voice of people. It's alive. I mean, you have compassion for a puppy, but you don't have compassion for that living thing. I don't want to get into the debate of, oh, it's not a human or not a human. Even if it's not a human, it's still a. I would dare say, can you at least call it an animal? I know it's not an animal. That's demeaning to the fetus. But I'm saying, you can't say it's like a liver. It's not like taking out your half of your liver or one kidney. Yeah, that's not. It's more than that. It's a living thing. Even if you don't want to consider it a human being, it's a living thing. If you have compassion for a living thing called a dog, how can you not have compassion for that little thing? It can't, it's no fault of his or her own, that he or she is an inconvenience to the mother. Unless all of society work together and get the mother through the 9 months of the inconvenience, and then she can go on with her life if she wants to. But why punish that little thing? That's where you see the contradiction. People who claim to be the champions of the weak and the voiceless, and then you see these crass contradiction examples where it's just a total contradiction of what they're saying. So how can that be? And we'll get to why in a moment. So another example, lack of tolerance. You know, they always believe, oh, I believe in embracing differences. That's one thing they always talk about. Oh, you have to embrace differences. I embrace different cultures, and I like diversity, and I like inclusion, and I don't judge because I like to accept different things, and I'm open to different things. Then a conservative shows up and, oh, thou shalt not speak. You shall be censored. You say that again, and we're going to close your account. Whether it be a Twitter or, you know, YouTube account or bank account, as it's happened literally to some people, that they have had their bank accounts closed just because of what they say that does not fit the liberal agenda. That is disgusting. That is immoral and should be unconstitutional, but it isn't. The thing is that all of this is, you know, all the censorship you don't do, you dare question what the CDC says, or you dare question what someone else said, or you dare question what you know, the so-called president says, then you're evil and you're this and you're that and you're the other, and they cut you off. What about embracing differences? What about embracing people who think differently? Who say, no, then suddenly the tolerance is completely gone. And you go, how can they say one thing and then turn around and do the exact opposite and not see the contradiction? And there's a reason why, because there's a false contract behind the scenes. And we'll get to that. Another example that I see, and this one is even more blatant to me, I think, I mean, the other two, you know, the liberal is going to build up these walls in his mind and to justify himself or herself. But with this other one, I think this one, there are no walls you can build because it's so obvious. And it's the liberals and the lack of true consideration for the environment. And what do I mean by that? Let me give you two examples, two or three examples. One is, this is a very simple one. You know, I used to work at a company, large company, and, you know, you go into the floor and it was just filled with computers, you know, the whole floor filled with computers and people working on the computers. And I used to work there and I used to arrive there a little late, but I would try to make up for the time by staying late. And I usually stayed very late into the night. So I usually was the last one to leave or one of the last ones to leave. So when I would leave, the floor would normally be empty or mostly empty. You could hear crickets and all that, and everything. But so, and I would notice as I was leaving that all the computer monitors had their little light on, you know, cause most of us had our laptops, so we would take it home. We just, you know, put in the docking station or whatever, and the monitor would be on the desk. So we would just use the monitor on the desk with the laptop, if you get what I mean. So we'd take the laptop off the docking station and take it home, but we'd obviously leave the monitor there. And every time I would leave, I would turn off the monitor. You know, it's a little button on the lower right hand corner. You just, you know, tap it gently and the thing goes off. It's very complicated. So I go through that very complicated procedure of turning off the monitor at the end of the day, and I would start walking out and I would see all the monitors with the little light on, and you would say, well, you know, no big deal. But I'd say to myself, hey, you know, I'm not no tree hugger. I'm not an environmentalist nut job and all that. But I've always believed in conserving. But for the sake of efficiency, not for fear of global warming and all this Chicken Little superstitious non-scientific nonsense that is taught and indoctrinated. But because, you know, it just makes sense. You know, you don't want to waste energy. I used to be tutored by someone when I was very young, a math tutor, and he, you know, he would always, one day he said to me, you know, when you leave a room, because I would go to his house, and he would tutor me, in math, and he would say, you know, we would come out of a room and he would always turn off the light. He would say to me, when you come out of a room, you always turn off the light to save energy. And that stuck in my head. So even to this day in my flat, sometimes I'm all in darkness when most people have their lights on and everything. I'm like in darkness. Like, if I don't really need the light, I don't use it. So maybe I go a little overboard with that. But I've always had this consciousness that, you know, you don't want to waste energy. Why waste it? There's no point. It would bother me to see all these lights, but what would shock me even more is that I knew that 97% of the people working there were diehard liberals or pro-liberalism or pro-Democrat Party. There were a few who were not, but I could hear from their talk and everything, their exchanges, that they were all, most of them were left-wing nut jobs. Because it was in here in Hoboken, New Jersey, from a company that had just moved from New York. So it was a New York, New Jersey thing, you know, Northeast Democrat, blue state, liberal, you know, situation, environment. And I would say, what a bunch of hypocrites, because they all talk about global warming and the environment and let's save the planet and let's save the whales and all that stuff. And all the monitors, they leave them all turned on, wasting energy. I know it's not too much. I know it's not like $500 million in one night, but that adds up. All the computers there, but that little light turned on, that light is not there for nothing. See, that's the thing. Liberals don't understand that something, they always believe that something comes out of nothing. That's why they believe they can create wealth at will. They can decree the end of poverty by decreeing the end of it, you know, by a legal decree, and give money to everybody. And that's how we all become rich. No, wealth has to be created. Something has to come out of something else. Nothing comes out of nothing, literally. So that little light is coming from something. It's being produced by energy being consumed from somewhere. So if they really gave a crap, gave a damn about the environment and the planet and all that rubbish they always preach, are so, you know, matronizing about, why don't they turn off their computer monitors when they leave? Why is that not relevant? And there's a reason why, because they're all working under a false contract, and we'll get to that later. And then another example is this story I saw recently, actually yesterday, and it's on the Daily Mail. And I'm just going to read the title. It says, shocking new drone footage shows Lake Tahoe littered with 8,500 pounds of trash after partygoers trashed the natural beauty spot with food, wrappers, beer boxes, and barbecue. So apparently this happened on the 4th of July, the last, you know, celebration of the 4th of July before the country dies. So all these people went to Lake Tahoe to celebrate. And I can see the photos here. It's just, they left a ton of debris, and I see some little ducks swimming, you know, near the shore next to where all the trash is. It's so depressing. A little duck saying, you know, oh, liberals must have been here, because it's just littered with rubbish, and they say 8,500 pounds of trash. In Lake Tahoe, I mean, that's that. To my shame, I don't know exactly where Lake Tahoe is, but I think it's in California, or somewhere out in the West. I should know this. I feel like a liberal right now. I'm a little ignorant on that, but I think it's in California. So the thing is, but I know it's out in the, you know, out in the West. And you would think that all these people who are, you know, diehard liberals, you know, who preach about the environment to you until they're blue in the face, would show a little more consideration. I just wanted to confirm, Lake Tahoe it's between California and Nevada, so it's in that area. That's why I wasn't too sure, I guess. But yeah, but it's a lot of it is in California. In California, as you know, is a liberal hellhole. So you would think that the people who go there, who would have gone there, would have been very conscious about not, polluting the environment and all that. But they don't. They didn't give a damn. And that you see the same thing with demonstrations by liberals. Every time liberals do a demonstration, they leave trash all over the place. Even when it's like a very blatantly liberal demonstration about some liberal cause, windmill cause that they're fighting for, when they leave the place, it's always all this trash, all this rubbish they leave behind. But when conservatives do their rallies, when they leave the place, they always leave it spiffy clean. You can say all you want about conservatism and all that, but one thing you can congratulate them on is they are very clean people. They do their demonstration, their rally or whatever, and they leave, and they leave, they take their rubbish home with them. And they are not, environmental nut jobs. So you'd go, why would the people who claim to be so pro-environment do this sort of littering and not give a damn? Well, it goes to the false contract that they are living under. Same thing with the computer monitors and so forth. And also with the environment, another example is, all these wind these wind turbines that kill all these birds. And they care. They always talk about caring about the environment, caring about the animals, but then suddenly animals start getting clobbered. And I've heard, I don't know how true this is, but there might be some reality to it that some people say that these wind turbines create some sort of vibrations and things that cause whales and dolphins to beach more often, and things like that, and there are actual concerns, even if you have to investigate, but there seem to be indications clearly that animals are suffering because of these humongous turbines that are put out in the sea, and suddenly all these people who claim to believe in animal rights and all these things, suddenly, oh, it's okay, it's okay. Why? Because of the false contract, and we'll try to explain that a little later. Another example, liberals and their lack of true consideration for other races. And you say, oh, they always claim, oh, we care, we fight for the rights of Black people, the rights of Native Americans, and the rights of transgenders, and all these. They are always talking about fighting for the rights of other races and peoples and things like that, and they, if for example, when they were complaining about the Washington Redskins football team, American football team, being called the Redskins, oh, that's racist and that's insulting to the Native American and that's a racist term, blah 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 blah, and they finally changed the name of the team to the Washington Commanders. Now the NFL doesn't matter anymore; it's just rubbish. Who cares? But the thing is that, all this show of support for races and peoples and things like that. But then you look, turn around and look at how Amerindians are living in these reservations, and they are trapped in this environment where they are. That's why they have so much alcoholism. There's no hope there, because And why are they living in these reservations? Because it's the Democrats, the liberals, saying to them, "Hey, you have the right to your own kingdom, your own land. You're not part of this country because we are invaders here, but we still give you the right to have your own little kingdom there. But do your thing. You're sovereign. It's your own thing." And these people are literally put in a reservation, put away from the rest of America. And they have no hope or of anything because they're not Americans. Why? Because the liberal keeps reminding them, you're not a real American. You're a Native American. We are the invaders. But the liberal always say, I'm an invader, but they never leave. I mean, if I felt like I was an invader in America, I'd be trying to find a way to get back to Europe or wherever my ancestors came from, if I really meant it. But, they keep saying, I'm an invader, but, But then they get the hell out. If you're an invader, get the hell out. And otherwise stop talking about being an invader. But they keep talking that way, and they keep telling the Amerindian, hey, live in your reservation, because we and continue your tradition. It's important. Do your rain dances and do your feather thingy, you know, hats and all that stuff, because it's important to keep the tradition and the culture alive, because that's who you are. You know, that mammon thing that we've talked about, the identity being tied to your culture. And they are busy, you know, doing the rituals and getting tourists to come and see them do the rain dance and all that stuff. And instead of them spending time, you know, growing as a culture and developing and getting into technology and innovating and learning and becoming part of the American fabric. But they don't care. No, because of the false contract. And hopefully you will see that. Same thing with black people. As we've said before, they claim to care about black people, but look at all the cities that are run by Democrats. Look at the public education. It's a disaster. All the black neighborhoods riddled with crime. You know, you're a black man. You want to live a good life. You want to work hard for your family and make something of yourself and your family and live out the American dream. But you can't do that because you're evading bullets on your way home. How can you worry about making a better life for yourself when you're just fighting to stay alive, to get into your flat in that, you know, or your house in that neighborhood? But the liberal doesn't care. He says, I know, I do care about black people. Well, why, when you run things, are things worse for black people? Why is the education level of black people, you know, decline? Why are all the public schools a piece of trash and black people not learning a thing in those schools? And why are they riddled with crime? Why don't, I thought you cared. Oh yeah, I do care. Yeah, I believe in, so they said, oh, let's add reparations. So just to show you, I really care. And what would a reparation do? They'd give them a bunch of money. They'd waste it on cannabis, do all these things, and that would go away, and then we'd be back to the same thing. All we did was add inflation and create all sorts of other problems. There's no real empowerment. So it's the hypocrisy. But why is the hypocrisy there? Because there's a false contract. Same thing with women, a lack of consideration for women. They say, oh, we care about empowering women and this and that, and breaking the glass ceiling everywhere and blah, 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 blah. But then you tell them, what do you think about the Muslims and how they treat women in their countries? Oh, yeah, that's not, that's not good, but can we change the topic? No, I want to ask you, what do you think about, you know, the fact that in many Muslim countries, women can't even drive. What do you think about that? Well, yeah, I don't know. It's not good, but you know, I believe in respecting cultures, and it's their country. And then suddenly, their tone changes because they are bound to a false contract, and the false contract, you know, prevents them seeing the hypocrisy of that. If I really care, and I do care about the rights of women. I have always been very upset, and I've said it, maybe not as often because it doesn't come up, but it's in my heart constantly. When I think of Saudi Arabia, the first thing I think about is women can't drive. And I know that has changed. I think that must have changed 1 or 2 years ago, that they started allowing women to drive, I think. But, you know, what the hell took you so long? You know, we're, you know, deep into the 21st century, and it took you this long to let women drive, and you know, and they still have to wear all that clothing. And I go, my goodness, poor women. It's hot as hell, literally, in those places, and these women have to wear all this stuff all over them. And I mean, that must be horrible for them, and all this oppression. And I do care, and I. Every time I had the opportunity, I would speak out about that, you know, when the context applied, and it's in my heart. It's always been in my heart, but with them, it's not there, because they're under a false contract. Another example is, their lack of true consideration for the rights in human rights in other countries. You know, the oppression going on in China, Iran, and, you know, in Muslim countries, as we were saying just now. And, you know, how Christians and are being persecuted in so many Muslim countries at present. You know, they believe in all we support it. We believe in supporting the oppressed minorities and this and that. Well, there's an oppressed minority, Christian minority in so-and-so country. Do you care about them? Well, I don't know. Well, the thing is, the Christians have been doing so much evil in the world. You know, we've been the oppressors. The Christians have been the oppressors. The white Christians have been the oppressors. So no, but these are not white. These dudes are not white. These are, you know, they're natives of that country, and they're Christian, and they're being oppressed. Do you care about them? They're a minority. No one can speak. No one speaks for them. They're being oppressed. Do you care about them? Well, yeah, but, you know, we have other things to worry about. Then suddenly it's all that talk about caring about human rights and the oppression of minorities, all of that disappears. Why? Because they're under a false contract. The same thing with Iran, all the oppression going on in Iran, you would think they would be irate. Irate about Iran being, you know, the way it is. And they don't give a damn because they are under a false contract. So it's all this hypocrisy. Why does this happen? Well, what are these false contracts or false or old contracts or old style contracts? These false or old contracts are contracts that are drafted by some elite or some group of elites somewhere telling you a list of external things you must comply with. So someone out there, some elite group, comes and starts writing a contract like this. These are the things of external things you must comply with, you must live by, you know, thing one, thing two, thing three. Yeah, and they come up with their stuff, and then they tell you once you tick off, it's like they put a list of things and they put a checkbox next to each thing, and they have them categorized. So if you like, they have a list of five items, and you go, and they say, they put a checkbox, and then they tell you, once you tick off these five checkboxes, then you earn this immutable label, regardless of what you do afterwards. So they tell you, okay, if you are for affirmative action, if you are for reparations, if you are for since I don't know their contracts too well, what other their nonsense? Let's take those two things, and there are I guess there are more, but let's take those two. If you have checked these two checkboxes, then you are a defender of black people, and that's the label you get. You're a defender of black people if you're for affirmative action and reparations, and then you earn your label and you put it on as a sticker, as a and it's immutable, at least in their eyes, because it really isn't. But they are told the label is immutable. In other words, it does not matter what you do or think after this. If you ticked off these two checkboxes, you're done. That's it. You have earned the certificate of being a defender of black people. So they can then ignore the plight of black America, the education, the crappy educational system, how teacher unions are, preventing crappy teachers being fired. They're earning these salaries and they're not teaching anything to these black kids. All of that becomes irrelevant because it's not in the check. It's not one of the check boxes that they have to tick off, if you see what I'm saying. So all of that doesn't matter because you have your label already. You are a defender of black people. That's all you need to do is these two or three or whatever items are enough to give you the label of defender of black people. So even if you don't give a damn about all the black people who are dying, like all the black on black crime, all the kids who live in fear in these black neighborhoods, these black kids many of them who want to make something of themselves and they can't because they live in this horrible. How can you prosper and think about, you know, studying for your history assignment if you're living in a housing project that reeks of cannabis 24/7, where you hear gunshots every night outside, and where all your friends are offering you drugs and all these things. How can you think about making something of yourself and studying for your next history exam, especially when your teacher was such a crappy teacher because he's never fired by any union, by these Democrat, these unions that are in bed with the Democrat Party? You know, how can you do something to yourself? But none of that matters because you already have your immutable label of defender of the black people. And that's how they operate. Like, for example, the environment. Oh, well, you have to swear allegiance to the global warming agenda. You have to believe in carbon, zero carbon emissions. You need to own an electric vehicle, a Tesla or whatever. Well, maybe not. And these contracts are flexible; they change over time. So sometimes, you know, it's a Tesla, but because Elon Musk has not been behaving as a full blown liberal, now they are crossing off Tesla and putting in something else. So maybe now it's not a Tesla that gets you the label anymore. Maybe it's some other car, but as long as it's an electric vehicle, you can still check it off. And then you go, you know, these things, and then you're an environmentalist. Then it doesn't matter if you trash Lake Tahoe. It doesn't matter if you leave your lights on 24/7. It doesn't matter if you leave the computer monitors on all night and waste who knows how much extra energy. It doesn't matter if you fly on a private plane, you know, like the hypocrites, like John Kerry and all these flights all over the place, going to all these conferences to tell people that they should not be doing carbon emissions and wasting energy. So they go, they travel all over the world, wasting all this energy to tell people not to waste their energy. But all of that doesn't matter because it's not in the tick boxes. Because the check boxes are designed to fit an agenda. The elites have an agenda in mind, so they only put in what is convenient to them. And obviously, excluding private jets for liberals is not a good thing for them, so they keep it off the list. So, but if you just check off these things, then whatever else you do doesn't matter because you're an environmentalist. And maybe another checkbox, tick box would be, defender of the sperm whale. You know, oh, okay, there's another checkbox, and defending the Siberian tiger or whatever. So all these things, and then you earn your label. You earn your label, but in real life, you can be an environment, a destroyer of the environment. And you don't give a damn. And also, when people tell you, well, the lithium battery, once it gets wasted, it becomes an environmental hazard. No one knows where to put it, and all the energy, environmental resources that are needed to build the battery, are more than what we are saving. You know, does it matter? No. I don't care, because in the contract it says if I own an electric vehicle, I am a defender of the planet, you know, Captain Planet and all that rubbish that Ted Turner used to indoctrinate kids with. Then it doesn't matter what happens to the battery. It doesn't matter if I'm wasting actually more energy. More energy is wasted producing the battery and the electric car than, you know, the energy that's being saved. It does not matter. For example, with when we had the lockdown nonsense and all the people wearing masks and all these, can you imagine how many billions and billions and billions of masks ended up in landfills, are in landfills because of all the liberal nonsense that was done with the imposition of lockdowns? Don't you care about the environment? No, but, you know, that's, the using of the mask was another checkbox in another category to earn another label. So it does not matter to them that it contradicts, you know, the reality, you know, the label of environmentalist. It does not matter because I wanted to earn my other label. There was this other checkbox that says you have to wear masks to be with in crowd and all that. And so it's more important to me for me to earn that other certificate than to live up to the certificate of environmentalist that I earned with these other checkboxes, if you catch my drift. So they're living by these false contracts. That's why you can't have an argument with them, because they are bound to a contract. That's all they're thinking about, living by this false old contract. So you can bring them all the logic they want. It does not matter, because they already have a label. They already earned their label. It's a certificate. You know, it's like earning a certificate. They put it on their chest and it says environmentalist, defender of the black people, defender of women. And nothing else matters, even if the reality is different, because all you have to do is comply with a list of external things. It's very easy. That's what's so wonderful, quote unquote, about this system, because you don't have to be committed really to it. All you have to do is a list of external things. And then you get the approval of a group of elites that give you the certificate, this label, and then you're happy and you're done. And you can see this, for example, also in other aspects of life. And I'm focusing on liberals right now, but this is everywhere. Think about the Catholic sect, for example. And I call it a sect because it is a sect. A sect is something that separates itself from the original group. And the Catholics all over say, oh, we are the original group. We're the continuation of the succession of the apostles and blah, blah, blah. No, you're not. Whether you believe in Christianity or Catholicism or whatever, regardless of what your belief system is, the reality is Catholicism is nothing like what Christianity started as in, you know, as shown in the Book of Acts and all these other, things that are written in the Bible. It's different. Whether you agree with it or not, whether you agree with the whole thing, whether you hate Christianity or don't, or whether you are pro-Catholic or pro-Protestant or whatever, the reality is not the same thing. I'm sorry, it's not the same thing. All the stuff that they practice in Catholicism, a lot of it is contradictory to what's in the Bible and what's in the, especially in what they call the primitive church, you know, the original church and how it conducted itself. It's completely different. So it's definitely become a sect, a separate sect. And they arrogantly claim to be the continuation of the real Christianity. No, you're not. Sorry. Whatever true Christianity is, sorry, you're not it. Clearly, you're not it. I'm not saying all the others are it or not. I'm just saying you. I'm just talking to you. You're not it. Clearly, you're not it. You're different. Something changed. So you changed something because a false contract got introduced at some point. And I think if you go into history, I think the false contracts that are in the Catholic Church were built in around the time of Constantinople or Constantine, you know, stupid emperor and hypocrite. I won't get into him. But the thing is that one example that where you can see these false contracts at work is, for example, childhood baptism. So, I mean, the little baby has no clue what's happening to him or her, you know, just have some water being dumped on his head, or I don't know if they dunk them in water. I don't think they do. I think they just pour water all over them, over their heads, and get their heads wet and their hair wet. And that's a baptism. Then what happens when you tick off that checkbox, or that checkbox is ticked off for you? Because in the case of the baby, it's not the baby doing it; it's done to them. But what happens when that checkbox is ticked for you? You earn a label. Now you are a Christian. You are a convert, and you are a member of the Christian religion. And that label is on you. You're a Christian now. It's an external act. And then it doesn't matter what you do afterwards, because you have the label. It's immutable. So you're done, baby. And then the next, you know, another label is or checkbox is first communion. I think there's the second communion. I think obviously if there's the first communion, there must be a second one. Otherwise, they would just call it communion. And I don't know if there's a third communion. I don't know how many communions there are. But, you know, who came up with this? You know, somewhere, someone, see, this thing is always done by a group of elites somewhere. Some intellectuals, some elites decide these checkboxes. They come up with this stuff and they start writing it into the contract. Because, and that gives people a sense that they are growing in their religion. They, you know, you do the ceremony, you're it, baby. You're at the next stage. You know, it's like when you do karate or taekwondo or whatever, and you get this belt, different color belts. So you do these checkboxes, you get a different color belt. It doesn't matter how you lead your life. Doesn't matter if you're a philanderer. Doesn't matter if you're a cheat and a liar, an adulterer. Does not matter. But and the thing, another checkbox that they add is confession. You know, so you can do all the philandering you want. Yeah, you can rob, you can be like, you know, whatchamacallit, the gangster that Elliot Ness called Al Capone. So you can be like Al Capone, but, you know, Capone, you're an Italian Cattolico. So as a result, then, you know, you do all these crimes, you do all these bad things, but you go to a priest and say, oh, Holy Father, bless me for I've sinned. And then you go off and tell everything. And then you get a prescription, like, you know, 3 Hail Marys and maybe a $5 donation when you leave the church or whatever. And you're done. And that's it. And you're cured. All your sins are wiped off. And then you can go philandering again and stealing and killing and all these things. And then you just come back and do the checkbox of the confession, and you're clean. All these external things. So it doesn't matter that you're living a contradiction in your life, because it's all under a false contract. And these contracts are designed to give the most power possible to the people who draft them. That's why they put these things in, because they know it makes things easier. So that way people will stay within the Catholic religion, they will continue donating to it and being submitted to it if we give them an out for their sins, a way to justify, you know, to kind of cleanse themselves so that they can, you know, start anew and go sin again and then come back and sin again, as long as we provide a mechanism for them to not feel guilty and then, you know, start straying away from the religion. That's why they put in that checkbox. It's these false contracts, and that's why, you know, the statue thing in the Catholic religion, it started because they wanted to convert more people, and a lot of people were worshiping statues, and they wanted to get them to Christianity, so they added a checkbox. Okay, let's put in statue worship. We're just going to modify it. We'll call it saints. And a lot of people worship the matriarchal spirit, you know, the matriarchal thing that's always been in the foundation of the human civilization, a faulty foundation. This matriarchal worship, that's why all these religions always have a version of the Virgin Mary. I remember my father used to talk to me about I'm not going to even say the name of the, I think it's like a demon. He had a statue of it, you know, a little thing. And I maybe shouldn't be saying this, but the thing is that, and I can't say the name of it. I don't want to say it out loud, but, she was like a woman revered in Chinese culture. He told me some stories about her, but I don't remember. And the thing is it is fascinating how all these cultures have a version of the Virgin Mary, like some sort of female deity that is revered and worshipped in some way and given like credit for being the source of life, or you know, that sort of thing. And that is part of the foundation of this matriarchal system. So the Catholics saw that all these other pagans had all this stuff, so they said, oh, we need to increase our power and our dominion. So to get these people in, let's add a kind of a Christianized, quote-unquote, version of these pagan female deities, goddesses. So they introduced the concept of worshiping the Virgin Mary. So they just added it like that. So that's how these contracts are. They are, and then it's okay to see if you check off the box of, you know, saint worship and you kneel before these saints and all this thing, then you're a good Christian. But then you go, hey man, look at the Ten Commandments. It says something about not worshiping idols and statues and all the stuff in the Old Testament that talks about, you know, how God didn't like it too much when the Israelites were worshiping, you know, bowing before all these idols and things. But it's okay. No, it's okay because it's in my contract. See, in the contract it says, if I check this box, I'm a good Christian. But it doesn't matter. But look at the... See, when you're under false contract, truth does not matter anymore. Because this contract is not bound... It's not founded on truth. It's founded on other things. And these, it's put in by these elites. And it makes life easier because you don't have to think anymore. So these contracts are top down. They come they're drafted by a group of elites, and then the stupid masses come and trust these contracts unconditionally, and they violate the five pillars in many ways. For example, they violate the first pillar, because they deny the reality that truth is independent even of the elites. So, see, truth is independent of all of us. But in these false contracts, it's as if, yes, truth is independent of me, because it's like the contract is the truth. The false contract is the truth. But this false contract was drafted by people who apparently are not also independent of the truth. If you catch my drift, it's like, see, the thing is, if I know that truth is independent of all of us, then I can question whatever you say, no matter how elite you are, because I can say, hey, well, the truth looks to be this, and I can point to the truth, like someone outside of the two of us, and I can say, look at the truth, says this, and I can see this in the truth, boom, 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 this is the truth. And what you're saying does not match up with the truth. Hence, it's not a valid thing you're saying. It's an invalid contract. I can annul the contract by recognizing the truth is independent of us. But the moment you start mingling the elites with the truth, so the elites become the truth. So whatever they say is the truth. Then yes, I as a plebeian am accepting that the truth is independent of me. It's embedded in that false contract. But I will not dare question the false contract, because if I question the false contract, I'm questioning whether the elites who drafted it submitted to the truth or not. And I would be saying the truth is independent of the elites, and I can't do that. I can't say that the elites are subject to an independent truth that they are accountable to. No, I can't do that, because they are the truth. And that's what conservatives do. So I've been talking about liberals and Catholics and all that, but conservatives and Protestant Christians do the same thing. Because the conservatives say, hey, I believe in the truth. You know, just like DeSantis said, the truth is our foundation. But in the previous paragraph, he says, I believe in restoring what our founding fathers did. In other words, the elites drafted a constitution that is the false contract, that is the truth. You can't question it, because if you question it, you're saying the founding fathers and the truth are not identical. And you're not questioning them and saying maybe they were wrong in some things, in some very big things, not just a few little things, very big, big things, as we've tried to explain over and over again in these recordings. So, but they can't do that. And if I check off, and then their list of checkboxes are not even the whole Constitution, because no one knows all these. It's a chop suey of things. You read the U.S. Constitution, there's no beauty to it. There's no elegance. There's no structure. It's just
random stuff, just added, like somebody, you know, like just an idea came to them, and just they wrote it, and another unrelated idea, and they wrote it, and then because it's all this list of particulars, it's not a concept, then a lot of things get left out, and then everything gets open to interpretation, and that's when all hell starts breaking loose. So the thing is that they do the same thing. Protestant Christians do the same thing. They just do it at a subtler level. They just say, well, the contract is my church. You know, I can't question my church or my denomination. You know, we have these ideas, these beliefs, and I'm not going to. Yeah, you're showing me these things in the Bible that seem to contradict what my denomination says, but no. I'm sorry, my one of the check boxes is, for example, you know, a lot of churches don't believe in the speaking of tongues. I mean, whether you believe that's real or not, that's not the point here. What I'm trying to say is, in their Bible, it says, you know, there's the gift of speaking of tongues, and Paul in his epistles writes about speaking in tongues. Some denominations say you don't speak in tongues no more. Oh yeah, that was for the primitive church, but not for us now. Well, is that in your Bible? No, it's not. Well, but why do you believe in it? Oh, because no, speaking of tongues is of the devil. So you're saying all these Christians who spoke in tongues, who claim to have spoken in tongues in the Bible, they were demonic? No, it's just different times. Is it? So then, you know, but the checkbox says if you are a true Christian, you will hate tongue speakers. And they can't uncheck that checkbox, because then they lose their immutable label of good Baptist or good whatever the hell they are. And that's why because they're bound to a false contract. These contracts also violate the second pillar that says the truth cannot be limited to temporal things. Because they equate the truth with these elites. They violate the third pillar because these contracts, because elites are actually using them to aggrandize themselves. That's why the contracts are flexible and they adjust to the needs of the times. You know, in the old days, you had to be one of the checkboxes in liberalism is you had to be anti-big pharma, anti-drug companies, because those companies are evil capitalists who like to take advantage of people. Now that has changed. Now everybody is, oh, Pfizer is so wonderful. And Moderna and all these things, oh, they're here to save us. Oh, so wonderful. They're so beautiful. AstraZeneca, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, back in the day, the big drug companies were the evil monsters who were trying to kill everybody. And that was the checkbox. But now that has changed, that switched, because they needed to do the 2020 election fraud. And so they needed all this stuff. So they said, oh, we adjust the checkbox. So they are using these contracts, these elites, to aggrandize themselves for their agenda and their purposes. So it violates the third pillar that says you can't use true authority for banal purposes or self-aggrandizing purposes. It violates the fourth pillar because, that says the truth can be manifested in the so-called weak plebeians. That's what the fourth pillar says. These contracts violate that because they say, no, you are a plebeian. You can't question the contract. This contract was drafted by some elite somewhere, and it is the truth. How dare you question it? And they also violate the fifth pillar that says truth is not static, but it is ever-expanding and open to examination. The false contract is set in stone. And as long as the elite, you know, declares that this is the truth, that's it. There's no thinking beyond that. So there's no examination, no evaluation. Are these check boxes, are these lists valid? Is there something wrong with this item? Should we reconsider having this in our checklist? No, there's none of that. So all these false contracts violate these five pillars, and they become very matriarchal. They can become dominated by the server and organizer personality, because the first three pillars are brutally violated. So, you know, there is no truth independent of us. There is no truth is not independent. It's not this objective reality outside of us. The second pillar is the truth cannot be limited to temporal things.
No, we are the truth. That's what the elites say. The third pillar is, you know, you can't use these the truth to aggrandize yourself for banal purposes. So those three pillars are brutalized. And then the fourth and the fifth pillars are distorted by the server and the organizer. So they say truth can be manifested in weak elements, but in this case, the weak elements are the elites, the human elites. They become the source of truth, but it's only them, not the other weak people, because you know all humans are weak. We have a weak nature. We are weak, fragile. We're some of the most fragile, organisms on Earth, you know, compared, let's say, to a lion or a tiger. I mean, you put a Shaquille O'Neal against a bear, you know who's going to win. So even the strongest are weak, you know what I'm trying to say. The thing is that we're all weak, but they take the fourth pillar and they just twist it enough. Say, no, yet truth is manifested in us, the weak elite. But so they feign weakness, and they say, "Yeah, I can have truth come out of me." And then the fifth pillar is manipulated. Truth is not static but open to examination. They use it. They leave it open to examination, but to modify the contract to fit their ends, and they organize. So what I'm trying, and the first three pillars are male pillars. They are, the first pillar goes with the judge personality, the second pillar with the visionary, the third pillar goes with the conqueror personality. Those three pillars are to restrain those personalities in the right way. But because those personalities are not restrained properly, they get corrupted. Then the other two are used, fourth pillar goes with the organizer personality, and the fifth goes with the server personality. So they just become organizers of the little people, and they act with this false service, pretending to be serving the people when they're actually serving themselves. And so it becomes a very matriarchal, very feminine system, because the last two personalities are female, as we've explained many times before. And so that's what we wanted to say about false contracts. And I guess we will continue with the new I'll just say it right now. The new contracts, I know this is going to go very long, but the new contracts are different because they are, because we're not bound to these false contracts, we're bound to the truth. That becomes very liberating, because you're not attached to these false static lists of items. You're attached to the objective truth, and you can judge anyone. You can hold anyone accountable. You're not a slave to anyone, because you're only a slave to the truth. And so that's why as the famous Bible passage says, "You shall know the truth, and the truth shall set you free." When you encounter the truth, then you are free from all these false contracts. You gain authority, and you become a vessel of true authority, and you can judge anyone. Anyone can judge you too, and you're not. There are no castes. There's no group of elites and plebeians. It's very liberating and very empowering, because then you can manifest all the five personality traits freely and openly and in truth. You can be a judge, you can be a visionary, you can be a conqueror, and then you can serve and organize without becoming a matriarchally distorted person. It's very liberating. You're not attached to these false contracts, and that's why the truth will set you free. And that's what the new contracts are, the ones that the truth wanted to establish in America, but America wants to stay with its old contracts. The liberals stay with their liberal contracts, and the conservatives stay with their conservative false contracts. And that's why the country is going to hell and will be dead in 2 or 3 months. Thank you very much for listening.